Good morning. The Water and Environment Committee will come to order. And we have a quorum. That's the vehicle for the morning. So we will go right into a public hearing on House Bill 2712. Beginning a public hearing. And I think I'll call the Water Resources Department up first, since this is their bill, and have the staff read the summary.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2712 allows for the split-use leasing of existing water right and the in-stream water right during the same calendar year when the uses are not concurrent, and the holders of the water rights measure and report to the Water Resources Department the use of the existing water right and the in-stream water right.
So, Paul Cleary? Tom Paul? Morning.
Morning, Chair Close, members of the committee. I'm Paul Clary, Director of the Water Resources Department. With me is Tom Paul, the head of our Field Services Division. We appreciate this opportunity to appear before you today on this ugly day.
Keep talking about that.
We're not real happy with the way the weather's setting up, and if you saw in the newspaper this morning, it's of concern to both in-stream, out-of-stream uses, and so we're continuing to monitor this situation, but we could use the entire legislature praying for rain. House Bill 2712 is a measure, as Megan indicated, that would allow split-season in-stream leasing of water rights. We've got, Tom, did you want to pass that out? We've got a visual aid here that we put together that hopefully will help in explaining this. This bill is brought forward as a new tool to help water right holders respond to the Federal Endangered Species Act, consistent with the Oregon Plan for Salmon Watersheds. Obviously, the Water Resources Department supports this bill. It came out of a task force that was established by the Water Resource Commission, I think as an outcome of a meeting in May in Representative Jensen's area, where we heard about people who were trying to come up with tools to respond to needs to restore flows under the Endangered Species Act, and we compared some of the existing tools and capabilities that we've got under current law and identified a gap. And that gap was, right now, if you want to lease water in stream, you have to make that decision before the irrigation season starts, and you have to dry up the acreage for the entire irrigation season. If you look on this visual aid here, the existing law and rules is the top three bars. You can either irrigate, as indicated on the top, you can either irrigate your total area of the water right all season long, you can lease the total area in stream all season long, or, for example, if you viewed this as, say, 80 acres, you could split it and irrigate 40 acres all season long and dry up another 40 acres and lease it in stream all season long. What 2712 would do is allow us to, us and various water right holders, to irrigate for a portion of the season and then transfer water in stream. Stop irrigating for the remainder of the season. The idea being that we use water to keep the productivity of the land up, keep people engaged in agriculture, and then try to move water in stream during the most critical time of the year, which is into the August-September period. The example down below then shows you that, where you irrigate all of your land part of the season, then transfer all of it in stream. Or, again, splitting some of your land, irrigating all season long, and some of it just a portion, then transferring in. We're hopeful that, again, this will add a tool that will become attractive for our agricultural water right holders. We understand right now that various power companies are out trying to acquire what they call load, pay people not to pump, and there's an interest in both leasing the water in stream and then receiving money from different power companies. For most people, though, you do have to establish a cover crop, or you do have to do some things in order to prevent erosion, and the concept would allow them to do some early season irrigation to establish a cover crop, and then both sell their load and lease their water in stream. So we think it's a timely tool, one that deserves close consideration and hopefully favorable action by this committee. And Tom is here to talk to some of the practical aspects of it and answer any questions.
Thank you. For the record, Tom Paul, Administrator, Field Services, Division Water Resources Department, Chair Close, members of the committee. We have had a lot of interest in this kind of a concept. We've had requests come to us in the past where people have irrigated, primarily irrigated in the spring, early summer, and then wanted to transfer in stream. Much discussion out of the LeGrand area, for example, and now, as Director Cleary indicated, in the Walla Walla Basin, where water users are trying to respond to their irrigation needs as well as the environmental needs that they're faced with. The past year, we have about 93 active transfers. We have been contacted already by farmers that divert out of the Snake River wanting to lease in stream. Some of them, with as dry as this year, have already started irrigating. We're not able to entertain a lease once, currently, we're not able to entertain a lease once irrigation begins until the following year. So this would be a tool that would be quite useful.
Question?
Question. Representative Jen.
First, a comment. I thought that was the way the director passed the buck on the questions. You were here to talk about some of the technical and answer the questions, you know, kind of really set you up on that, Paul. Did I understand that with this bill you would be able, even though they started irrigating, to accommodate the request to split season or use some for the...
Madam Chair, Representative Jensen, obviously in order to do it this year, we'd need an emergency clause on the bill.
Okay. Is that something that we should look at putting in the bill? Or
Madam Chair, given how the weather's setting up, I think that would be real timely.
Absolutely. Yeah. Madam Chair, I would say that we're talking about August loads. We're there. So,
Yeah.
Therefore, the reason for the question.
Madam Chair. Representative Monica Anderson.
Thank you. Just some clarification so I understand what this is all about. And two small questions. If you have so many cubic feet per second, say 100, and you wanted to just use half of that, say 50, could you allow 50 cubic feet per second remain in stream, or even lease that to someone else?
Madam Chair, Representative, you'd lease it in stream. You could lease 50 CFS in stream, but you would have to dry up the acreage equivalent to that. What this allows is a split season lease, not what we call a split duty lease. In other words, you can't take and say, I'm going to use lease 50 CFS in stream and then spread the rest of the remainder of my water over the original acreage. In order for us to administer the program, we'd still have to see land dried up, only this would only require it to be dried up for a portion of the year.
Even though you might have a crop that doesn't take maybe quite as much irrigation?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, because of the administrative problems with what we call split duty, we'd never be able to ride herd on that. We'd basically have to be able to see land that's been dried up in order to avoid injury to other water rights.
Okay, and then one other. If, let's say you have a water right certificate, is it possible to use, is it only for specific use?
Madam Chair, Representative Moss Anderson, yes.
So it's designated?
Specific use, specific location, specific season, and any change in that goes through a transfer process or, in this case, a lease process.
Further questions? Would you want to continue?
Madam Chair, I think we're finished. We'll be in the audience if you want to call us back up.
Okay, I think we probably will want to discuss the emergency clause after the testimony. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, call forward Andrew Perkey, Oregon Water Trust, Multnomah.
Chair Close and members of the committee, my name's Andrew Perkey. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Water Trust. And Oregon Water Trust was formed in 1993 to work cooperatively with willing sellers and willing lessors of water rights to improve stream flows in critical streams of the state. The board of the Water Trust is made up of representatives of agriculture, tribes, conservation groups, utilities, and policy and legal experts. We first worked with water users in 1994 and completed 4 one-year leases that year. This past irrigation season, we had 57 agreements with water users around the state. Those 57 agreements put 35 cubic feet per second of water in stream. Inadequate late season flow is the largest limiting factor for fish productivity that we've seen in the work we've done in the last 7 years. Split season acquisitions would allow a portion of a right to be put in stream when it is needed most, particularly for rearing habitat or juvenile fish. Split season acquisitions would utilize water for irrigation when stream flow is adequate to meet the needs of fish, thus allowing land to remain in production with minimum impacts on flow during those times. Our experience in the last 7 years in the field is that a lot of water users are willing to contribute water later in the season, but need to irrigate early on to at least keep their crop going, particularly if it's a hay or alfalfa crop. This tool of split season leasing could help bridge the gap between advocates of spring flows and those who do not want to see land taken out of production, because clearly one of the issues and concerns about the work of the Water Trust is that it takes agricultural land out of production. Split season acquisitions would allow also for us to most cost effectively allocate water in stream, as the rancher could still produce during the early to mid season with the irrigation portion of the right, and then put the in stream right, the remaining portion in stream, and requiring less compensation from the Water Trust. That's a better deal for us because we're buying less water and we have to pay less money, but we still have the same bang for the buck, or better bang for the buck. Another issue is that early to mid-season application of water, particularly in flood irrigation, which is a lot of the irrigation use that we see with the folks that we work with, may help sustain stream flows later in the season through return flows. And if we can see water put out on the land early and water up that soil profile and then stop the diversion of water later in the year, we can hopefully accomplish the same goal in two different ways. The issue of return flows is complicated, though, and I think we need to look at that more carefully to understand the relationship of putting water on the field early in the year and what the impact on flows is later. Clearly, there are issues about how to make this work on the ground, and I've talked to a lot of water masters around the state who have concerns about implementation of this program, and measurement is going to be essential to allow this to happen. We need to be able to understand how much water has been used already and how much is thus remaining to be able to put in stream later in the year. This is critical primarily to avoid injury to other water users, because if we start implementing this program and begin to injure other water users, I think we're going to see resistance to it. We believe that given the issues and questions that remain about what is a really good idea, that it might make sense to do some sort of pilot of this program for 2 to 4 years, probably 4 years. 2 is probably too short. But to really look at this carefully and look at the issues that emerge from using this tool, and then hopefully be able to come back in 4 years and say, hey, this worked great. Here are some issues that we need to address them at the time. So we're supportive and hope that the committee is as well, and we're available to answer any questions about the Water Trust work working with water right holders. Thank you.
Representative Hoff.
Thank you. What would your solution be for accurately measuring water?
Well, certainly 2713 is an opportunity, the next bill that you'll be considering, to provide public resources to help water users get those devices in place. So we're going to need to understand how much water has come out during the irrigation use of the right so that the basis for the in-stream lease can be defined. And providing a financial support system for those water users is going to be important.
Rep. Van Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you feel that with the 57 leases you had last year, there was an ability to adequately measure them?
It varies from lease to lease, and our issue with measurement depends really on the amount of water we put in stream and the relative seniority. Also, on the permanent acquisitions we've completed, we're certainly more interested in ensuring that measurement. But some leases would be very difficult to have measured whether they were there. It was more an eyeball by the water master to say, you know, your two-tenths of a CFS is there because the creek is flowing. So I think as we do more of these, particularly as we need to get more precise, that we need to have more measurement to be able to do it.
Further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Next we have Brad Harper, Water for Life. Welcome.
Good morning. Good morning, Chair Close, members of the committee. My name is Brad Harper. I'm Executive Director of Water for Life. We're a nonprofit organization established in 1990 to represent family farmers and ranchers. We think House Bill 2712 is an excellent tool for our farmers and ranchers to put more water in stream, it's a very useful tool for them, so we support this bill. We sit on the ESA work group, a work group the Water Resources Department put together to go over some of these issues, and we did have a lot of difficulty finding unanimity in ways to address a lot of these ESA issues we're facing, but this bill, split season leasing, is one tool we were able to agree upon. The only thing we would note, in addition to the emergency clause you raised, we might want to consider a sunset provision, 2 to 4 years. It'd give us an opportunity to revisit this and see how it's working. Since this is a bit experimental, we think that might be prudent. Otherwise, the only other question I had, and maybe Mr. Cleary or Mr. Paul could address it later, I didn't have a chance to talk to him beforehand, was there's a provision in the bill for water use reporting, and we're just curious as to how frequently water users would be expected to report, whether that would be monthly or annually or what they might be considering. But otherwise, yes, Water for Life does support this bill, and we appreciate the opportunity to address the committee.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Harper? Seeing none, thank you very much. Okay, next we have Pete Cass of Oregon Farm Bureau.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Close, members of the committee. We also support this bill. We were on the work group that worked with the ESA process, and this is probably one of the few ideas and possibilities that came along that may help our landowners, producers, protect themselves and have some options as related to ESA and the problems that we may face down the road. We also have the same concern, though, that was mentioned before. We think a sunset might be reasonable since it is an experiment. And the key issue we have with leasing is making sure all other users are protected. Since many times we'll be doing leases at the dry part of the season, the chance for injury may even be higher with a split season use lease. The only difference is we'd like to see it maybe about 6 years to really give the program a chance to work itself out, so we really have a feeling as to where the problems might be and if we can tweak it to fix it or whether it's not going to work. And to save time, I'll end my comments there and leave myself open for questions on my testimony, and thank you for this opportunity to visit with you about this bill.
Mr. Tess, would you also be in favor of an emergency clause?
Yes, ma'am.
Questions? Thank you so much. Next witness is Katie Kate, Oregon Cattlemen's Association.
Thank you, Chair Close, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Katie Kate, representing the Oregon Cattlemen's Association, and the Cattlemen's Association is also in favor of this bill, just giving more landowners and water right holders options on dealing with wildlife issues and ESA issues. We would also be in support of adding an emergency clause so we can implement this program this year, and as well, as we've heard earlier in testimony, also a sunset clause so we can come back, review the bill and the statute, and maybe fix any problems that might occur. And with that, I'll answer any questions.
Would you be for a 2, 4, or 6-year sunset?
I would say more on the 4 or 6. In that time, we'd be able to see if the program's working, if any changes are needed. In that time range, 2 would definitely be, I think, a little too soon. Thank you.
Seeing none, thank you. I'm rolling right through. Karen Russell, Water Watch.
Good morning. I'm Karen Russell with Water Watch of Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on House Bill 2712. We would support the addition of an emergency clause. We support House Bill 2712. We were also a member of the ESA work group, and this was one idea that we could all come to agreement on. We think this is a critical tool for restoring stream flows, and we think the bill as drafted provides a good framework for this tool, and there will be issues relating to injury and other things, but we think the state will have to work out through rulemaking. We would like to see the bill passed without a sunset. This is one of the few additional tools that we have been talking about over the last few years to try to address stream flow issues, and we think that whatever problems might come from a program like this could be worked out through rulemaking and readjustment that way. And so with that, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Question, Representative Cruz.
Well, I'm just curious. Historically, when we look at sunset clauses that are added to things, very few things ever disappear. So really, in essence, what a sunset clause does is require review at a date certain, and I'm trying to understand why that would be a bad thing.
I don't think it's a bad thing necessarily, but we think it's an important tool and one that can work and be adjusted over time without having to have it revisited legislatively. And again, it's one of the few tools that we will be adding to Oregon law to protect in-stream flows, or to add to our tools of protecting in-stream flows. So we would just like to see it be added. With or without a sunset, you could still review it in a 6 years or so.
Follow up. I guess, especially in the world of term limits, when you look at the fact that in 6 years nobody that's here will still be here, I guess from that perspective, I think if nobody in 6 years knew about this, why would they ever review it? So. So from that perspective, I don't understand why reviewing this would be a bad thing.
And I'm not saying it is a bad thing. So.
Yeah.
Everything, Lee?
Yes, Madam Chair, I think that repealing it probably isn't necessary. I mean, sunsetting it is probably not necessary because this is a tool that's already worked. It's worked in other states. So you could either have a report due in 4 years to the legislature to bring it back up in the process, or the sunset. I support either one.
Further questions? Representative King.
I see in your written testimony that you'd like to see the opportunity for a permanent split season in stream transactions. I didn't see that was excluded, but maybe it needs to be specified. I was just wondering, have you had any conversation with the department in terms of any position they might have on that? If not, I'd be kind of interested to see if they have a position or
Right, and
they need to think about it some.
Right. And I think that has been part of the discussion on the task force. I was not the representative for Water Watch on the task force. But the point in our testimony was temporary leasing is a good concept, a good beginning, but we also should be looking for ways to permanently put water in stream. So I appreciate you making that point.
Paul?
I wonder if the director or someone could come forward and update us in terms of that concept.
That was my intention, Representative Keene, as soon as the witnesses are done, that we would have the department come back up.
Thank you. That'd be great.
Thank you. Madam
Chair, I think that if one wanted to permanentize the lease, they could just do it as a transfer. So there may not need to be such thing as a permanent lease.
Chair Close, Representative Lee, I don't know if you can do a permanent transfer, split season transfer, though. And maybe that's a question the department can answer.
That's the bill.
Okay. Further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. Okay, that completes our witnesses. I'd like to call Paul Clary and Tom Paul back up, and I would like to discuss three of these issues that have come up. First of all, in line 22, can you tell us what your intent is where it says the holders of the water rights measure? They have to report to the water resources.
Right.
What are you envisioning that to look like?
Madam Chair, what we would need is a report on how much water was used prior to the transfer in stream, because we've got to avoid injury to other water users, and we want to make sure that the combination of the use on the land and the use in stream doesn't what we call enlarge the water right, which affects other users. So our reporting requirement would be how much was used prior to the transfer in stream. So obviously we've got to have measurement on that use, and then the other requirement would be on ourselves to measure the in-stream water right and basically maintain a report of that so we can provide that information to other water users so they can be assured that they weren't harmed by the in-stream portion of the lease as well.
And would that would be a written report, or would you be developing a form?
Madam Chair, we'd use a form. It'd be part of the application process.
Okay. Questions, Representative Lee?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Water for Life was asking about the frequency of reporting, whether it would be monthly, seasonal.
Madam Chair, Tom Paul, Water Resources Department. Madam Chair, Representative Lee, the report that we're thinking about right now would be a report at the time the application was filed to determine how much water had been used under the existing water right, or under the water right that's being changed through the lease. We need to determine how much has been used there, and that would be the basis of how much would be allowed in the lease itself.
So you're not talking about how much was used during the time that just prior to the time that the lease?
Madam Chair, Representative Lee, what we're talking about is the quantity of water that has been diverted that season prior to the lease being approved.
Further questions on that? Representative Monica Anderson.
Well, not, thank you, Madam Chair, not specifically on that, but as I'm hearing everyone talk, are there incentives for farmers and ranchers to conserve water if or is there always just a set amount of water that they need to have and they're going to use it all?
Madam Chair, Representative Moses Anderson, there are some incentive programs. We've got what we call a allocation of conserved water statute, where if they go through and implement some efficiency gains, both in the application of the water as well as in the conveyance of the water, say lining canals or piping canals, they're allowed to use a portion of that water on other land or firm up their supplies. So there's an incentive there. And obviously there are incentives just in terms of trying to make the most efficient application of the water. You save on energy if you're pumping you save on fertilizer, you save on a number of things. So, you know, we've, you know, in terms of the bottom line business efficiencies, those are always out there. But in terms of the statute, we've got this allocation of conserved water program for that.
Thank you. Paul, I think everyone's in agreement on the emergency clause that this needs to be done right away. Would you comment on the sunset provision?
Madam Chair, we had some discussion with this with our Senate Bill 93 task force, which is a task force established by the last legislature as a four-year program, and they're supposed to come back and report on conservation and storage. And I think it was the sense of that that they'd like to see this as a pilot study. We don't have a problem either way. We'd be happy to do it with a report, or if you wanted a full review and a legislature to reaffirm it. If it's working as intended, I think we wouldn't have any problem getting the legislature to reaffirm it. I would certainly like to see it go out at least 4 years. And I've had it go different ways. I even had a hybrid sunset clause on one bill one time that required a report, and if that report weren't produced, then the provision terminated. So that was kind of an incentive to the agency to have to get the report done. You know, however the committee would like to see it, I'd like to see at least 4 years. So. Or six, yeah. Some of these leases we are looking at, as a matter of fact, Madam Chair, Representative, we're looking at extending our lease term out to 5 years, I think, because we want to match up better with the with some of the conservation programs, the CREP program and so forth. So six would probably be a good idea.
Well, I've never seen us not overturn a sunset. Yeah, I may be wrong about that, but seems to me they tend to be extended once they're in there. And just the fact that the bill goes through causes a report to be made without extra effort. So. Okay, no further questions. Thank you very much.
Representative King's question about do we allow split season transfers? No, we don't. But we do allow leases to be for any fixed duration. Tom, what are our rules?
Chair Close, Representative King, right now leases by Administrator Farrell are limited to 2 years, but they can be renewed. And that's, of the 93 that we have in place right now, a large percentage of those are actually renewals from prior years. We don't have any way to transfer a part of a water right. Like we're talking a split season lease now, there'd be no way to transfer that permanently. One way that we could accomplish it would be through the allocation of conserved water, where more efficient measures are put in to apply the water, and then the conserved portion could be transferred in stream permanently.
Chair, I think one of the difficulty with a split season permanent transfer would be the irrigation season varies so much from year to year, and it would be hard for somebody to say, I know that as every July 15th, I'm going to be done with two cuttings of hay. And that's the idea of the lease, to give a little bit more flexibility there.
One more.
So it sounds like, you know, you just don't allow longer than 2 years, but a related topic, though, you have a backlog. I'm wondering if we're generating a lot of time dealing with the two-year turnovers, that if we had a longer time span, you know, you could dedicate more resources to catching up with the backlog as versus keeping up with two-year turnovers.
Madam Chair, Representative King, I believe we're going out to 5 years. We're in a rulemaking right now to increase that to a five-year term. And the leases, because we're allowed to do a quick injury review and then go ahead and approve the lease, and then if we discover injury, start ratcheting back on the lease, we generally don't have a backlog on those. We can move them through pretty quickly. Where we run into backlogs is when we're doing permanent transfers, that real detailed injury review, because once we approve that, it's fixed in place, and we want to make sure that we're not solving problems for one water user by creating problems for a number of others.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am.
Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2712 and open the work session on House Bill 2712. Committee, I think we're pretty much in agreement on the emergency clause. I would like to discuss that also. I'd like to amend the bill, have committee amendments to add an emergency clause and also sunset provision. I'd like to have discussion on that. Representative Lee.
I would so move both the sunset clause for 6 years and the emergency clause.
Okay. Are you moving a conceptual amendment?
Whatever
it's required.
Okay. Madam Chair, I would request that Representative Lee rescind her motion. We can request the amendments and then move them when we actually have them. But if we're going to do just an emergency clause, I have no problem doing that conceptually. But a sunset is more substantive, and I think we need to have the language. So.
I agree. Mm-hmm. Okay, Representative Morgan.
I would agree with Representative Cruz. I think that we would be better off to see the amendments before we pass the bill out. But I have no problem with adding an emergency clause and adding a sunset clause.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Representative Cruz.
Let's have the emergency clause as of July 1st.
Is everybody in agreement with July 1st? Okay, and I'd like to discuss the time period of sunset. Four to 6 years is what I'm hearing. That's been a king.
Six.
Six. Is everyone in agreement? Mm-hmm. Okay. We will have those amendments drafted. Thank you. Work session on House Bill 2712. We have open work session, open a public hearing on 2713. And we'll call for the Water Resources Department again. Paul Cleary and Tom Paul.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, Paul Cleary, Director of the Water Resources Department, along with Tom Paul, the Administrator of our Field Services Division. House Bill 2713 is a companion to 2712, and what it would do is allow us to establish a water measurement cost share program revolving fund. You might think of this somewhat similar to the fund that the Fish and Wildlife ODF&W has for assisting in fish screening costs. It'd be used to help pay the cost of installing or replacing water measuring devices used in conjunction with projects to protect or monitor in-stream flows. And I think that's important. What we're looking at here is public money to go to measurement devices that help protect this public resource, putting the water in-stream flow restoration. We see the need for such a funding mechanism because of the need to provide incentives both for people to engage in various flow restoration-related transfers and leases, as well as to cover the costs that we incur in order to protect those waters once they are transferred in stream. These measurement devices can run anywhere from several hundred to several thousand dollars, even up in a range of $20,000 or so if you're talking about a major stream gauging station. This would authorize the use of public funds to assist water users in installing or replacing those devices. We would go out and try to secure money from entities such as BPA, Power Planning Council, U.S. Geological Survey, and our other funding partners, as well as work with our Watershed Enhancement Board. The idea would be that once we accumulated funding in this, we then use it to cost share for these measurement devices, and I think we've got it a cost share of up to cover up to 75% of the cost to install or replace a measuring device. And I think there's a fiscal note on this of $5,000. I would point out that both of these bills, while they say introduced at the request of the Water Resources Department, and we certainly worked with Representative Jensen on both of these bills. They came out of our Endangered Species Act work group, and they came out so late in the process that we couldn't get them through our normal process going through Department of Administrative Services and the Governor's Office We've already been chastised by the governor's office for, for this indiscretion, but we certainly support the bill. I think it'd probably be more accurate to say at the request of our Endangered Species Act Work Group. We didn't ask for any money to be put into the fund. We would try to capitalize it with some of the money that we've got available in our current budget to cover flow measurement, and then we just wanted to have the account available for us to go out and seek funding from other entities and deposit it in and be able to assure to them that this money would only be used for measuring devices and have it readily available.
Question, Representative Morgan.
How did you come up with the $5,000 amount?
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, we didn't have any dollars in it. I think it just got stuck in when the bill got drafted.
So do we have any way of knowing whether this would be a put a dent in how many measuring devices would be needed, whether this would do any good or?
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, certainly if we were able to go out and get $50,000 from U.S. Geological Survey, it would definitely put a dent in measuring devices. If we were able to do them for, say, $500 or so a pop, you know, it would really help. And while it authorizes cost shares up to 75%, we would hope that, you know, if people got available funding, they could help us stretch the revenue as much as possible and maybe go 50%.
Can you just describe to me what these measuring devices look like, where you install them?
Chair Close, members of the committee, Tom Paul, Administrator, Field Services Division. The measuring devices are going to vary depending on how water is diverted. Some diversions involve a pump and a pressure pipeline, and a measuring device there would look a lot like a flow meter. Other diversions are an open canal or a ditch, and a measuring device could be a steel plate that has sides that are shaped a certain way and a depth that is a certain depth. It's all going to be very dependent on how the diversion of water occurs, and it'll be a device that is designed for that diversion.
Okay. Representative King.
I'm wondering, is a revolving fund the only way that you can hold the funds? I certainly don't have any trouble with the concept, but I do have some concern with what it might be the apparent, modest size of the fund and the fact that, it takes some process, effort, expense to do due diligence, of it, and then we end up, going through the audit process, and then heaven forbid someone, misinterprets what their powers are, and then we go through, criticism of agency because someone didn't follow the technical parts of the fund, so I'm just wondering if, do we need to go to the full establishment of a fund as versus a line item in your agency?
Madam Chair, Representative King, good questions. We've been talking some with OWEB as well, whether they'd be able to set up an account like this within their system. We do receive some money right now from the USGS that we use for measuring devices, cost-sharing measuring devices with various types of districts. Right now, that's just a fund maintained within our agency funds. I think we get about $35,000 a year. Obviously, interest off of that goes into the general fund. We try to get the money out as quickly as possible. The one advantage that I see to having an earmarked fund is we can provide the assurance to any kind of funding entity that that money will not be siphoned off anywhere else in the budget. They know that it's going to go in there, and it's only going to go to these on-the-ground activities. And for some of them, as you indicated, who are concerned about audits, they like that kind of assurance.
And I should tell the committee that this does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Representative Cruz.
Yeah, following up on Representative King's comments and your comment about conversations with OWEB, I guess I would have a problem with moving that there. I mean, this is a specific fund for a specific purpose, and I think having it in your agency would be the appropriate price for it for the very reasons you mentioned. Does it have to do with recovery? Certainly, but you know, not everything that has to do with salmon recovery is an OLEB, nor should it be. So, you know, I guess I kind of like the structure of what you have here.
Okay, Morgan.
There is an interesting thought, though, about OLEB funds being a source of funding.
Well,
this fund.
Yeah, but it could come in, yeah.
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, in our conversations, we've talked to them about how, you know, we might go in and apply for a set amount of money from them, and then since it doesn't match, the individual projects may not match their grant cycle. We'd have that on account with them, and we could move it through this once we funded a project. That was one of the advantages that we saw. We figured we needed to move pretty quickly on some of these,
mm-hmm.
and they understandably have got a real detailed process and a certain fixed grant cycle that they've got to go through. And in talking with Jeff, he was open to that type of an approach.
Representative Cruz.
Yeah. In your conversations with them, did they deem this sort of funding to be something that fit under their definition of capital?
Madam Chair, Representative Cruz, it didn't come up that it didn't fit the definition of capital, so I would certainly think you could make the argument that it's a capital project. Where we did have some concerns is their rules specify that they can't fund things that are required in an order from an agency. Remember, the idea was is that they wanted to make sure agencies weren't out just ordering people to do something and then opening the OLEB tap for the funding. And in talking with Jeff, he thought that either he could make some modifications in his rules or it's a requirement of statute, but it's not like an enforcement order, if you will. All we wanted to do was provide this as an incentive to people.
Yeah.
It'd be more like the fish screening requirement, I believe.
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't see this as requiring any. I mean, this is a permissive voluntary program, so I don't think that this would hit that bar as I read it. So.
Chair Close, Representative Cruz, we agree with you in the discussion that we had with the director of OLEB last week. I think they generally agree with that, too, but they were going to go back and look at their administrative rules.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Monica Anderson.
Yes, I have a question regarding monitoring again. How do they right now report water usage or the amount of water that they use?
Chair Close, Representative Monica Anderson, right now, we have some required reporting. Government entities by statute are required to report annually. We have a standard by which they have to meet that, and it's a combination of measuring devices. Some flow meters, some what we call recording devices that are monitoring open channel flows. We also have some water rate permits that we've issued to non-government entities that require annual reporting, but not every water user is required to report annually.
And with this, nothing so far that we've heard will require that from everyone.
Chair Close, Representative Mona Sanderson, that is correct. This bill would not require measuring and reporting of all water users. It would give folks a tool that they could access a possible source of revenue to help offset the cost of installing measuring devices.
And one last. Are there instances where you know water users are using more water than they should? I mean, is...
Chair Close, Representative Mona Sanderson, it's possible that they are. When we find out about it, we, with the field staff that we have, to go out and regulate them back to what the water rate allows. It's not uncommon for us to find folks that are diverting at a greater rate than the water right allows. Most folks, though, when our field staff talk to them, they voluntarily or through voluntary compliance, we step back to what they are entitled to.
I'm so concerned about our water condition, and so I'm just curious as to what kind of monitoring. I always hate to tell people what they should do, and hopefully they just voluntarily say, hey, there's no water, we won't use as much, but I don't really think that's realistic.
Representative Morgan.
Just to step back again to the funding of this, as you mentioned, it does have a referral to Ways and Means, and we will robustly look for other places to fund this in the general fund. So,
as we would expect you to do. Other questions?
Okay, thank you very much. Next witness, Andrew Perkey, Oregon Water Trust. Oklahoma.
Chair Close, members of the committee, Andrew Perkey, Executive Director of the Oregon Water Trust. We support House Bill 2713, both in the context of House Bill 2712 and making implementation of that workable, but also in the context of all the work we do to create in-stream water rights. It's a key point that although Oregon Water Trust acquires water rights for conversion to in-stream water rights, it's the state of Oregon through the Oregon Water Resources Department that holds those in-stream water rights. So I think it's essential that the agency have a source of funding to work with water users and others to protect the flows that Oregon Water Trust and others have acquired for the state and the state's benefit. On the question of the OWEB funding, OWEB grants might be more appropriate for gauging stations that are actually on the creek as opposed to measurement devices that the water users themselves are installing. This is particularly true where an in-stream water right has been created, either through acquisition or through creation by the state. For example, OWEB has funded a gauging station that's been installed on Squaw Creek as it flows through Sisters in order to measure and protect 1.81 cubic foot per second in-stream water right that the Oregon Water Trust purchased there 2 years ago. So we think that OWEB should entertain grant proposals for installations of gauging stations where it can protect an in-stream right, but maybe this revolving fund is to assist producers and irrigators to install devices on their measurement devices where they divert the water. Not to say that it should be precluded that a gauging station could be funded, but certainly we intend to request OWEB support where appropriate for gauging stations. Thank you.
Questions or comments? Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Pete Test from the Oregon Farm Bureau.
Vice Chair Morgan, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Pete Test, Associate Director of Governmental Affairs for the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. This, by testimony, be sure we support this measure. We have a little concern that we make sure that this money is available to all landowners who have water rights who want to measure. It's no doubt that in the near future, probably everyone will be in that boat. And the cost has always been our chief concern for the process. Many people are in low production type business with irrigation and cannot afford $2,000 or $3,000 measuring device or flood control system. And if that is going to be necessary, we need somewhere to help them, somewhere for them to go to help them do that. I have no concern where the money comes from as long as it gets there, and I feel that if we at least get the bucket ready, if money comes around, we have it available, we have the bucket to fill, and that's why we support this issue. I have questions if you want to ask them.
Questions or comments? Representative Cruz.
Pete, do you see anything that excludes anybody from this?
Vice Chair Morgan and Representative Cruz, no, not really. Just my normal paranoia to make sure that everyone's included.
Okay. Well, I would assume that if we had the agency back up, that they would affirm that it is inclusive.
So I'm sure
they can get that on the record.
Further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll call Brad Harper from Water for Life.
Vice Chair Morgan, members of the committee, Brad Harper with Water for Life. As Director Cleary mentioned, Senate Bill 93 Workgroup and the ESA Workgroup, actually I should say Senate Bill 93 Task Force, since it's a statutory task force. Didn't have time to really consider the two bills that were brought before you today. We got them at the last minute, so some of this, the comments you're hearing are really just our first substantive take on ways to improve these bills. Having said that, we do support House Bill 2713 as a concept. Water for Life worked very actively on fish screening cost share issues since those have been up since about 93, and we think the fish screening program has borne out that cost share is a very effective way to encourage people and give them the incentives to voluntarily do things that the state would like to have them do. And in that regard, I think 2713 is a good bill, but could be made much better by simply removing a word and adding a word. If you have the bill in front of you, you'll note on line 14, it says, monies needed to install or replace a stream flow gauge. We believe that these monies should also be available for maintenance purposes, and I think in discussions with other Senate Bill 93 work group members that there really wasn't any disagreement on that issue, that they agreed that maintenance should be considered. So I would add a word there, and then on line 16, it says, measuring device or head gate will be used to protect in-stream flow or to monitor in-stream. I would remove the word in-stream there, the last occurrence right after monitor. And the reason I say that is we believe that these monies should be available to all people, all water users that the department has decided they want to monitor and measure their water use. We agree it's valuable for in-stream purposes, but we believe it would be valuable for any purpose and think that this program should be available for any eligible water user.
So, Brad, would you recommend taking out in-stream in both places that it appears on that line?
Vice Chair Morgan, I've had this discussion with some other people. I don't believe we need to remove the first instance of that, the word in-stream, because we will be trying to protect in-stream flows. So to the extent that is an accurate statement, I think by removing it after the word monitor or to monitor water rights and stream flow then pulls everybody else in.
Questions or comments? Representative Cruz.
Okay, Brad. So on line 14, you'd want it to read, needed to install, replace, or maintain a stream flow gauge. Is that basically it?
Basically, yeah. In any order you'd want to do that.
Madam Chair. Representative Lona Sanderson.
Having no knowledge regarding these gauges, is there a lot of money involved in maintaining these gauges?
It varies, Representative Monis Anderson. It can vary from just simple repair, perhaps just something needs to be recalibrated, to where you could have a flood event that actually wiped the whole station out, the whole monitoring device, in which case you'd have to replace it. And anything between those two extremes could be the case.
I was just wondering if the reason maintain was omitted was because of possible limiting the cost.
Not that I'm aware.
Okay.
Representative Cruz.
Madam Chair, I guess the way I would read it, the way it currently is, and if it's just to install or replace, that would prohibit you from, if you had something that went wrong with it, just being able to go in and put a new part in. I mean, so in a way, putting maintain in there might be a cost savings ultimately, because you wouldn't have to put a whole new gauge in. You could just repair the one that was already there.
That's correct, Representative Cruz.
Further questions or comments? Thank you very much.
Yep.
Next, we'll call Katie Kate from the Oregon Cattlemen's Association.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Katie Kate, representing the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. The Cattlemen's definitely supports the concept of House Bill 2713, the concept being a voluntary cost share program. However, we would also like some modifications to the language and cannot support it as written. The first part would be not allowing maintenance of these devices. We see this being a deferrent for people interested in putting in a measurement device, knowing that they're going to have to be the ones to bear the cost of maintaining the devices.
and...
Will you refer to the line that that's on?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
It would be Section 2, Subsection 3,
okay.
Where it talks about installing or replacing a, and then it lists the devices.
So adding maintain would be helpful from your perspective?
Madam Chair and Representative Cruz, correct.
Okay. Thank you.
And along with Water for Life, we also support language allowing for the monitoring of water rights and making some amendments there. This would allow funding for water users who are not participating in a in-stream lease, and they could monitor their own right use and water use and participate in their own conservation program while not doing a cost share or a lease program. And thirdly, $5,000 is not an adequate funding, and we just urge the department to look at other funding sources. As you've heard, these devices can cost up to $20,000, and only giving $5,000 does not give a lot of options for the number of water users we have that might be interested in this program. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Morris Anderson.
To me, it's so strange not to, I mean, I pay for my water bill, but I know I'm not paying for the water. So it should be a practice that the burden of maintaining these gauges rests on all taxpayers rather than the person that's actually using the water. I'm just trying to look at how we can maybe conserve on some money, but I'm new to this.
Representative Close and Representative, for protecting in-stream lease, that is actually a benefit to all Oregonians if we're putting more water in the stream for habitat for fish and endangered species. And so it's encouraging the landowner to participate in these programs if Oregonians want to see more habitat for fish and monitor in-stream use. So it is costly for these landowners, and they're in a business. Agriculture and farming is their business, and sometimes these programs don't pencil out in the long run.
Further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jim Myron, Oregon Trout.
Thank you, Chair Close and members of the committee. I'm Jim Myron, representing Oregon Trout. We're here in support of this bill as well as the previous bill. We think they're both very important, and they're very closely related. I just want to respond a little bit to some of the discussions that have occurred. If you're concerned about consistency between this program and some other programs, then you should think carefully about the maintenance question. It's my understanding that under the fish screening program, the landowner is responsible for maintaining fish screens. So if consistency is a criteria for what you're looking at here, then maybe the landowner should be required to pay for the maintenance under this program as well. One other just question that I bring up on line 13, where it talks about up to 75%. The fish screening program is also has a statutory provision of 60%. By the state and 40% by the owner of the device. Also, in another forum where a number of us have been discussing fish passage, and you'll see a bill soon on fish passage, and in that legislation, it would also establish a cost share program for fish passage, and the language that we've all agreed to in that is at least 60%. So you may want to consider language similar to that in this bill as well. Thank you.
Representative Cruz.
Okay. I But if 60% is standard language, it says up to 75 would allow 60%. So,
You're right, Representative Cruz. I was just raising it as an issue of consistency.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions? Thank you very much. Was there anybody else that wanted to testify on this bill?
Madam Chair?
Representative Jensen.
May I have the freedom to make a comment?
Sure, go ahead.
Some of the requests that have been made on this bill, Madam Chair, might have been looked at had the parties approached the sponsor of the bill, and we might have been in a position, if those were desirable things, to have had amendments here and be able to move the bill. As it is now, if we're going to do any amendments to the bill or anything of that nature, we may be slowed up in the process. So I just would like to have made that request or that observation.
Well, Representative Jensen, since you are the sponsor, what is your feeling on this? Would you be open to amendments?
I'd be open to the amendments or to discussion of the amendments, yes, and would have been happy to have discussed them.
Yes. Representative Morgan.
I would be curious and ask of Representative Jensen, when the bill was drafted, what was the feeling about adding the ability to use the fund for maintenance?
I think the topic had not appeared, as I'm recalling, back in the work session as we're going through, and I do see some issues with maintenance. I think Representative Cruz partially is certainly correct that if you maintain things, you may prevent some more expensive items later on down the line. In relationship to the comment about a disastrous sort of thing with a flood coming through and taking it out, the language in the bill, I think, would already allow it to take care of that because it's to replace something that, you know. But there certainly will come into existence some perhaps more costs involved. It gets to be a little bigger, perhaps, program. But in relationship to the funding that's here, one of the places I think we're looking at and talk about in this is other outside funding, gifts, estate, et cetera, sort of thing. And given some time for this fund to grow, I mean, we can't really do much of that until we have a bill of this nature. And given some time for this fund to grow, we may be able to very nicely work in the area of maintenance as well as new, you know.
The issue was also addressed on the percentage that the fund can contribute to the metering devices. Can you tell us why 75% ended up being in the bill?
I'd have to, talk again, I think, to bring the department up on that, if I might,
sure.
Representative.
Could you come forward?
I believe that was somewhat of an arbitrary number, if I'm not incorrect in my recall on this.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Paul Clary again, Director of the Water Resource Department. Representative Jensen, you're accurate in your recollection that it was a somewhat arbitrary, and I think that's why we used the up to 75%. There was a device that made a lot of sense to get in order to encourage a transfer. We'd be willing to look to go to that amount and hopefully maybe cover the remainder with in-kind contributions even. And we, as you indicated, Representative Jensen, the maintenance didn't come up when we were talking about this, but certainly having flexibility to avoid the need to replace a device by appropriately maintaining it makes sense. The way the bill's written, it wouldn't, you know, obviously we'd have some rules that would implement this, and we'd want to make sure that any money we got, we stretched as far as we could and we appropriately targeted so we wouldn't be funding maintenance activities that we would think that you know appropriately could be the responsibility of the water user or were incurred because of neglect. We try to make sure that we were protecting investments.
Representative Moss Anderson.
How many, I think you might have mentioned this before, but I don't remember. How many participate now in monitoring water out of all the water users or Is it a very small amount, or is it 50%, or?
Chair Close, Representative Moss Anderson, we, in terms of reporting, we've got about 800 government entities that report, but there's a number of different measurement devices in place. In Representative Jensen's area, I think pretty much the entire system has been, both surface and ground, has got measuring devices on it because we're doing a number of creative exchange projects and so forth. Wherever we need measuring devices for regulation purposes, we've got the authority and statute to require them. And obviously, you know, a water short year, we may trigger some additional need for measuring devices. I know in the time that I've been the director, the 6 months, I've probably issued maybe 10 different orders for people to put head gates on in order for us to be able to regulate. But in terms of the formal reporting, right now the only requirement is on governmental entities and then some of our more recent water rights in areas where we've got declining groundwater and so forth that we need to keep a tight rein on.
I guess where I'm going with this is I'm trying to figure out whether to maintain is a good idea or not, but I think it's really important for us to be encouraging our water users to start monitoring, and if this is a way to provide that incentive, then I would be in favor of it.
Just a quick note, a rebuttal or comment on Director Clary's statement. This year, water measurement devices may be somewhat unneeded.
But we certainly hope not. Representative Cruz.
Thank you. Our comments on the elimination of the word in stream on line 16, any problem with that?
Chair Close, Representative Cruz, we, you know, this was a companion bill to the 2712, which is aimed at in-stream leases. Obviously, that's how this was drafted, was to kind of restrict it for those purposes, giving discretion to the department should this fund be established and should we be able to secure funding from different entities for other purposes, you know, might make sense. We would still try to use public dollars for public purposes. We'd have to have that kind of connection. We'd still want to retain the ability to require water users to put head gates and measuring devices on if we use them for regulation purposes, and I don't think this voids that. But I think, as Representative Moss Anderson indicated, down the road, anything we can do to encourage additional measuring and monitoring water use is in the public interest, because if we're not measuring, we're not managing it.
So. Okay. Follow up.
Any trouble?
The change from up to 75% to at least 60% to bring it kind of in line with other things, would that be a problem, or are you considering that maybe you're talking less than 60% in some cases?
Madam Chair, Representative Cruz, I think the latter. We would be looking for cases where maybe based on an ability to pay, we could just cost share 50%, and this would give us that flexibility. And I would expect in the rules we'd want to kind of categorize and give some direction to applicants as to what we might consider.
Okay.
I'm a real fan of flexibility.
So am I.
Further questions, Representative Hass?
Just while we're on this subject, I don't want to open a Pandora's box, but how do you feel about measuring devices or meters on individual or individual users?
Chair Close, Representative Hass, obviously required in a lot of cases in order for us to regulate and distribute water, and that's what we've got that ability right now to wherever we need to regulate and allocate to require those devices. We try to encourage people to see the benefits of measuring devices. Some people feel threatened that there'll be a tool that'll be used against them. So we're working real hard on the education aspects and getting people to understand that they can really be a tool to improve your water use, not to penalize you.
Just a follow-up.
Follow-up.
With your department's support, mandatory or requirement to put that in?
Chair Close, Representative Hess, we've looked at that in the past, and we're working with our commission on kind of a strategic plan where we identify where can we get the biggest bang for the buck in terms of requiring measuring devices. A blanket across the board, we've had concerns about that because, one, it might divert attention to areas that are less critical. And we've also, without the ability to provide some incentives via cost share and so forth, we could see that as being a difficult program to implement.
Further questions?
Okay, thank you very much.
Committee, that includes the witnesses on this bill. We don't have a work session scheduled for it. What I'd like to do, and Representative Jensen concurs, is have a work group meet on this bill with Representative Jensen to voice some of the concerns that we've heard and try to draft an amendment. So when we have done that, we will bring this bill back.
Sounds good.
And I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 20, excuse me, the hearing on 2713. Yeah. Is there anything else for the committee?
We're probably concluded,
we are adjourned.
Oh, no.